Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast, where single women find support, empowerment, information, and inspiration around the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and mindset. I'm your host, Katie B., and I'm thrilled to be back for a second season to share more stories of women like you and me who are navigating these choices, along with interviews with experts in the fields of fertility preservation, coaching, and psychology. Whether you're just starting to question what to do about your finite fertility, or whether you're ready to make the leap into solo motherhood by choice, I hope these conversations will help you to feel more supported and confident along the way. Because whatever you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. Hello, friends, and welcome to another bonus episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm calling these bonus episodes because, as you probably know, if you're a regular listener, I kind of abruptly ended season two during my third trimester, and I really don't know when or if there will be a season three. I hope so, but right now it's just not something I can plan for. So in the meantime, I'm just going to put out these bonus episodes whenever I can make it happen. And I'm super excited to share this episode with you today. Today I have a guest with me, Sarah Parente from Sacred Work Doula. And if you listened to the last episode, you know that Sarah is a very important part of my own kind of crazy birth story that happened not at all in the way that I expected it to. I cannot even imagine and don't want to imagine what might have happened if Sarah had not been there. Sarah is a certified birth doula, and she is in the Austin, Texas area where I live. She's been attending birth since 2008, and she's worked with families in hospitals, birth centers, and at home. Throughout her years as a certified doula, Sarah has provided non-judgmental support for numerous different family types, and Sarah is a wealth of information about pregnancy and birth and postpartum experience, and I just feel so, so lucky to have met Sarah and to have her as part of my birth story. So I hope you guys enjoy this conversation, and you should definitely follow Sarah on Instagram. She's at Sacred Work Doula. And she posts lots of great things. So even if you're not in the Austin area, I'm sure that you will learn from her on Instagram. Enjoy the show. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
I am so happy to have you here. I've been looking forward to chatting with you and for people to get to know you because you've been such a big part of my story and you have so much wisdom to share. And so I just am really appreciative that you're willing to chat with us.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it.
Sarah was my doula when I gave birth 8 weeks ago. And so I'm just wanting to chat with you, Sarah, and help people kind of understand what a doula is and kind of the role that they play. So I wanted to just start out with your personal story, maybe telling us a little bit about how you got into this work.
Sure. So I had my first child in 2005. And I remember that before I had my first, my sister-in-law, she had her last child and had used a doula, and I didn't know what it was. And I thought it was just this hippie thing where, I don't know, crystals are chanting or something. Cliche like that. I wasn't sure. And she also had done an unmedicated birth, and I didn't understand why anyone would want to do that. So that was kind of a new thing, but I went on and did my birth how I wanted, had a medicated hospital birth. Then about 4 months after my oldest was born, we moved to California so my husband can do an internship. And while we were there, I found myself not knowing what to do with had this baby. I had no family or no friends. And I went to a La Leche League meeting. If anyone doesn't know what that is, there's an organization called La Leche League International that is a worldwide breastfeeding support organization. They've printed the Womanly Art of Breastfeeding books over the years, but they typically have monthly meetings all over the world. There's multiple meetings here in Austin. I went to one in California, and not only did I see babies nursing that were bigger than I was used to seeing, but then this one lady came in and she had just had a baby, and she had her baby in a sling, which I was not used to seeing. And she told us that she had just given birth, and someone said, "Oh, where?" And she said, "Well, at my house." And I was floored. I thought, who does that? Why in the world would you do that on purpose? What year is this? I was just so confused. Look, I didn't have internet or cable at our apartment. So I lived across the street from a library. And so I went to the section on infancy, childbirth, parenting section, and I found some books about birth stories. And there was one that was just birth stories around the world. And I read that. I just didn't know that birth could be anything other than just a clinical, you just do it, you got to get through it. It might be horrible and you're scared and hopefully you come out of it alive. I didn't realize it could be such a personal experience. So I read that. And then I read a book called Baby Catcher by Peggy Vincent. And she was a nurse in the 60s in the Bay Area, and then also became a midwife. And so she chronicles her birth stories that she attended, reading those stories and seeing how different they were. And sometimes people had cultural things that they would bring to their birth experience. And sometimes people had tons of family around, and sometimes they didn't want any family around. And just the tender way that she treated them and cared for them, I loved it. It was so different than how I felt I had been treated in my first birthing experience, where, you know, you go in, you wait 45 minutes and you have a 5-minute visit where they say, you know, any questions? Good. See you in a month. And she cared for these people for their whole self. She processed things with them. She cried with them. She laughed with them. She was much more a part of their life than what we typically see in a more medical model. So this was all new to me. So I read that and I thought, man, I want something like that next time. Like, I don't know that I want to do it at home, but I just want it to feel more like a human process and not just a medical procedure. Mm-hmm. So I just kept reading more. I kept checking out books where people had birth stories. And then we moved back to where we had been before, California. And I went to a La Leche League meeting there again. And I was trying to find some friends and some people who, surprisingly, in 2005, people were not quite as breastfeeding friendly as they are now. So being in a group of people in public where I could breastfeed in front of them and practice nursing in public, or they would talk about birth, or they would talk about baby wearing, or just other like new mom things where, you know, you're just in it and that's all, like, you're in it right now. Mm-hmm. That everything is diapers, baby carrying, car seats, breastfeeding, like just everything. So two of the ladies there that I met that became my good friends were actually doulas. So they told me what a doula was and how it varied from a midwife. And so for anyone who doesn't know, a doula is a trained professional who provides continual physical, emotional, and informational support to parents before, during, and then shortly after the postpartum period. We try to educate people beforehand, and then we're with you along the way. So they kind of showed me what that was. And I thought, well, gee, I want a doula for my next birth. And then by the time I was pregnant again, so in 2008, I started my doula training and I wanted to become a doula. So I started that in 2008. So I guess that's 13 years ago or so. I learned a lot about the physiology of birth. There was a whole communication module where you talk about, you know, how do you listen versus just talking at people? Because sometimes when you learn a whole bunch, you just want to vomit all your information to people and it can be intimidating. And then also processing your own experiences. Part of the communication module as well was I told my daughter's birth story. It was like 3 different times where you write it out and you write an experience, a birth experience, either that you've been to or your own. And it's just the facts first. Then you write it again, where you're putting in the feelings that you were feeling as it was happening. Then you tell it again from a reflective point of view, where you're thinking back what you learned, or, you know, just kind of looking back. And I feel like that processing was good, but I also feel that one thing I learned from that was to not let my own birth experiences get in the way of my support for other people. And I see it often where someone gets into the work because maybe they had a really bad experience and they want to save people from that bad experience. And I understand that. I think it's important to process our own birth experiences and then kind of leave that at home when we, when we go to show up for people.
I absolutely agree. And I know that's hard to do. You know, that was part of my story with, I talked a little bit on the previous episode about feeling pressure to induce. And I did have a medical care provider who wished she had induced earlier. And that was a big part of that pressure. And so you and I, and that was one of the things that you helped me with during my end of my pregnancy, was kind of talking through, you know, how much of this is I really should be thinking towards induction and how much is maybe this other person's fear or unprocessed birth story. And it was helpful to recognize that that might be part of what was going on. But I could see how that would be really hard work as a doula to not bring in not just your own birth experience, but all of the births you have attended, even if, you know, if you've seen a traumatic birth or something scary that happened. And then of course you're going to want to prevent that same thing from happening. Wow. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that aspect of.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's the good and the bad, and some people get into the work of being a doula because they had a fabulous birth experience and they want people to feel just as empowered as they felt. Mm-hmm. And that's great. I feel like the most important thing is when I have a client, their birth is their birth. I am not trying to push an agenda on anybody. I ended up having 3 more kids and they were all born at home with a midwife. And that was what I wanted for me. I think some people might think that doulas are only for people who want to go unmedicated or only for people who are at home or, you know, this or that. And I have no agenda other than I want you to feel happy with your birth experience. Mm-hmm. If that means that you want to get an epidural at your 5th contraction, then yeah, let's do that. That's fine. I'll make sure that, you know, you feel supported and that you have the information that you want. If you're wanting to do it without medication, then I'm going to support you as much as I can in that. And if the path changes during the birth, which it often does, that's okay too. Mm-hmm. And I'll help, you know. So I think there is a misunderstanding sometimes where, oh, you must just do home births. And actually, most of the births that doulas attend are at hospitals because 92% of people in America have their baby in the hospital. Mm-hmm. I do like having the variety and seeing, I think once you've seen out of hospital birth, it definitely changes how you perceive what is normal and what is possible. Mm-hmm. Not dogging on people who work in hospitals because that's where most births occur. But if that's all you've seen, then you might think certain things that the hospital does routinely are truly necessary for every baby or every parent. When maybe not necessarily,
right,
maybe they're just treating everybody as if they're high risk. And again, like you said, if you've seen something scary happen, I wish that it didn't change hospital policies. But if one person has a bad VBAC experience and they're a doctor and all of a sudden they start banning VBACs at their practice, I understand the fear and I understand that nobody wants any bad outcomes. But what that is taking that one experience and then putting that mm-hmm. on everybody else.
Yeah, and it's hard not to do that. I know from following you on Instagram and just from talking with you that you have attended all kinds of, you know, you've been at C-sections, you've been at medicated, unmedicated, home births, like all of those different types of birth. And something that I was looking for when I started looking for a doula was that I thought I had an idea of what type of birth I wanted, but I also had never given birth. And so I wasn't sure. And so the first time we talked, part of what I was listening for was if I decide halfway through or after the 5th contraction that I do want an epidural, when I'm saying right now I don't, is this a person that's going to make me feel icky about that or shamed in some way or not? And I think I will say that that is one of the reasons that I felt so comfortable with you is because you did a really good job just from that initial conversation of making it really clear that my birth was my own and that there wasn't one right way or there wasn't one way that you would prefer or kind of pressure towards. And so I don't think I even knew that you had had, I think I knew you'd had multiple births that kind of looked different ways, but I didn't at all feel like the way you birthed was the way that you thought was the best way or the way that I should birth. And so that was really, really nice. It's funny because I thought for a minute about home birth, and I think maybe if I were younger, I might have considered it more. There was a lot of fear that was not coming from me about my age and how that was playing in. But the main thing about home birth was like, I don't want to have to like deal with cleaning up my house after. Like, I just kind of wanted it to all stay at the hospital, like all the,
yes,
the birthing tub and the towels and the sheets. And I was just like, no, let's do that somewhere else. And then, but I think next time I would totally want to do a birthing center. Mm-hmm. I think kind of that middle ground. And, you know, we talked towards the end of my pregnancy, I thought about switching gears mm-hmm. pretty close to the end and then didn't, but I think that's a good middle ground is a birthing center.
Yes. I will say at home births, the doula and the midwives, they clean up everything before they leave your house. That's so you're nice. Left and they put the laundry in the wash and everything. And yeah. Well, and then after how your birth went, I was like, you might be a great candidate. For,
hey, I'm, for I almost had an accidental home birth. So,
because that luckily your car ride was so short, but that and the getting the IV in, like, you wouldn't have to deal with that.
That's true. That is true.
Austin has a great doula community. And I will say that the doulas that I know in Austin, none of the ones that I know that I interact with much would ever make people feel bad about getting medication or choosing, you know, certain things. The hardest thing for us is, I would say, if someone says, I want to have like a birth center type birth, but I'm going to choose this hospital with this doctor, and they've chosen a hospital that's not super natural birth friendly and a doctor that has this 50% C-section rate. That makes it a little difficult because it puts almost a little pressure, like, well, I've got a doula, so I'm going to be able to have this birth. And there's only so much I can do, because I'm not going to talk at your doctor and say, no, you're not allowed to do that. If they're not practicing in a way that you feel like aligns with what you want, the best thing is to choose another provider. The provider you choose makes a huge difference on the kind of birth outcome you have and also how you feel. So
I learned a lot along the way about that. And we've talked a ton on this show about most of the women who are listeners of the show have gone through some sort of fertility treatment, because most of us are single. And so whether or not we actually have true fertility concerns, we all have the what's called social infertility, where we're needing help to get pregnant because we don't have a partner. And so we've talked a lot about finding the right reproductive endocrinologist or the right fertility practice. That was a huge part of my story in the beginning, is I was made to feel like very discouraged and very hopeless, and ended up actually moving forward with trying to get pregnant far before I was actually emotionally ready, because a doctor made me feel like it's now or never, you better get what you can get. And it was just a mess. And so it's a very common theme on the show, I guess, about finding the correct care provider. And so just extending beyond not just the fertility practice, but also into your OBGYN or midwife or whoever is caring for you. And then, like, kind of jumping off of that, what would you suggest when someone's looking for a doula? And just to clarify, the doula is not a medical provider.
Correct. So doulas and midwives are different. Doulas don't do any clinical tasks. Midwives do what an OB would do minus surgical procedures. So they take care of you prenatally and then help catch the baby and make sure that you and the baby are fine. Doulas are the warm fuzzies. And
so you can have an OB
and informational. Yes.
Right. So you can have an OB and a doula, or you could have a midwife and a doula.
And a doula.
But you you wouldn't just have a doula because they don't deliver babies.
Correct. Yes. No, doula
doesn't replace the medical. Yes.
Yes. Doulas don't replace the care provider.
So if someone's interested in hiring a doula, what are some of the things that they should be looking for in terms of, let's talk about both like credentialing and that type, kind of the more logistical pieces, training, and then also what questions would they ask, or how do they find a good personality fit?
You know, I guess I'll go with maybe what people ask me. I would say that doulas don't have to be certified to be a doula, because we're not doing any clinical tasks. Although these days, most people are getting certification as well, because some hospitals are asking, especially during COVID, they didn't want people's best friends saying, I'm a doula, so that they could get in when doulas were considered part of the birth team. So more people are getting certified, but you don't have to be. And there's some people that I know that maybe did a training, didn't pay for the certification, who have attended hundreds of births. So that's not as big of a deal. I would say the biggest thing that I tell people when they're interviewing me is, you're really looking to find someone you click with. You need to find somebody who you can be naked and cussing with, basically. So, you know, you can ask them, like, why did you become a doula? Personal experiences, or maybe that will lead to other more natural conversation with them. Some people want a more experienced doula, and that's fine. Some people, they're like, oh, it's my second child. I don't care. Or maybe their first child, and they don't care if someone's attended one birth, because everyone has to start somewhere. I would say at birth number two for me, I was still pretty good. I probably got to that person's house earlier than I needed to, because I was so excited. You know, those are some of those rookie doula things. You're like, oh, I've been with you for 30 hours and I'm dying. I kind of learned to pace myself now, but asking, you know, tell me about, have you had experience with someone who needed a cesarean? Have you had experience with someone who did it all unmedicated, or, you know, with people who have an epidural, or have you had clients who are over 35? And in general, do you see any differences? And also, doulas are great resources if you contact them earlier before you're needing to find a care provider. So nurses see all the different doctors in the same hospital they work at, but doulas see the different kinds of hospitals in town. They see what the different doctor, like how they, like mm-hmm. they may be super nice and great gynecologists, but at the birth, they may have totally different personalities. So I think it's a great idea to talk to doulas early on. Mm-hmm. And if you say, this is what I'm looking for, I want someone who, this is how they think about birth, this is how they treat people, this is, you know, how do they do their call schedule or something like that, then doulas can actually say, well, you know what, I bet these practices might be in alignment with what you're looking mm-hmm. for. So sometimes when people contact me last minute and then they find out that, oh, what they want and what I know what this practice typically does it's not the same thing. And then they feel like, oh, but I'm already 30 weeks. Do I really want to transfer? And some people do. And some people feel like, oh, it's too late. And mm-hmm. then they just stay with them.
I think I interviewed 4 or maybe 5 different doulas. You were the first one that I talked to, and I immediately felt comfortable and connected with you and was like, oh, that's it. But then I mm-hmm. felt like, no, I need to do due diligence and talk to a few more people. And so I did. And I do remember from every conversation, there's something that I walked away with that I learned or that kind of informed my whole process or what I knew about the birthing scene in Austin. So it was a really valuable experience, even when it was a conversation where I was like, yeah, I don't think this is the right fit for me. Mm-hmm. And then I did want to share too, hopefully this isn't awkward, but that I did, I ultimately, like, I felt very connected to you. And then I made a different decision early on. I think I even told you I wanted to work with you. And then I had an opportunity that where I was really going to save some money by doing sort of more of a trade. And so I tried to sort of take the frugal route and not spend the money. And the closer I got to my birth, the more I really lean heavily on my intuition. And I kept thinking about you, and you would post things on Instagram and I would see them, and it was like kind of making me sad. And I just felt like this is the person that I want to work with. I knew it from the first second I talked to her. And it's like, money should not be the reason that I make this decision. And I've said before, and I will say it again, like, I would pay double what I paid you or more, like whatever you're charging, I would pay to have your support. And nothing against, I mean, I'm sure I would have had a great birth, you know, with mm-hmm. other doulas as well. But I think that you can ask all the questions and get all the information, but there's also just that gut feeling. And like you said, like, can I cry and cuss and be naked in front of this person? I just felt very comfortable with you. And it's funny, cause I think you're younger than me, but you feel kind of like a big sister to me, cause you just had the experience.
Like 1 year.
But you've had all of the experience. And so I just felt so safe with you. And I said on the previous podcast that I felt very safe to just kind of be in my own zone, because I knew it was that big sister energy of, she's got my back. Like, I don't have mm-hmm. to be on full alert of everything going on in the room, because that was what you were doing. And I knew that if anything started to happen that wasn't what I had expected, or, you know, kind of the normal course of things, that you would kind of step in. And like you said, like, you weren't going to tell my doctor, no, don't do that. Or, I mean, that was still my role to advocate for myself, but I knew that you were going to kind of pull me out of the trance, be like, hey, you might want to tune in here. And this is what's about, they're about to give you an episiotomy, or, you know, that type of thing.
mm-hmm. When I was listening to your birth story, and I very much thought, you know, this is such a great example of, you listen to your body and your intuition. So during the process, you know, whether it's picking who's going to be at your birth, listening to, how does this feel? Who do I feel safe with? Whether it's the doctor, you can't pick the nurse. Nurses come and go every 12 hours. And I mostly have great experiences with nurses here in Austin. But the doula, you're picking someone that, you know, okay, I don't know who's going to be on call at the hospital, but that's going to be my person, you know, unless there's extenuating circumstances or something. So trusting your gut with that.
And for me, my OBGYN practice cycles through, there are 6 doctors. I had seen them all at some point in my pregnancy, but I didn't know like what doctor I had at my delivery totally depended on the day of the week. So knowing that, that was even more important to me to have you there because you were the only person in the room that I knew for sure was going to be there. So that was really important because there are, and I do have friends who've worked with doula groups where they meet multiple doulas and they don't know until it's kind of the same thing. It's a rotation and they don't know who's going to be there until their birth, which I guess would be okay if you had also a partner or your mom or your doctor was consistent and you had other consistency in the room.
Yeah. But. Or you had a midwife or a smaller practice. Maybe there's two doctors in the practice and you're like, there's plenty of people who want that. And there's lots of people who want just a solo doula because they just want to know that that's going to be the person.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about what a doula does leading up to the birth and then during birth. Like, what are some of the roles that you play for your clients?
So, you know, we talk on the phone anytime you want, basically during normal hours, not overnight. I meet with people two times before they give birth. And I think I had told you if you had wanted a third meeting, I would have been open to that as well. If you felt like there was more you wanted to discuss with me, but those meetings enable me to form a relationship with my clients and get to know them as a person and what are the things that they're most afraid of or what are the things they're really looking forward to in their birth and for them to feel like they can trust me, you know, because I've met people the day they're giving birth and been a fine doula for them. But sometimes when they, like you said, you kind of felt this like sister energy from me having conversations. I feel like the more is put in prenatally, then the more connected I feel at the birth. Mm-hmm. And everyone's different. I have some clients, it's very like businessy where we just have our meetings and then I show up at the birth and I do my thing for them. And then there's some where we're texting and joking and it's just different. Mm-hmm. And it's whatever you're wanting out of it, you can probably get. So
I thought it was great that you came to my house. I didn't really realize how valuable that would be until we were actually the night of the birth when I was like, you were coming into my house. Like I didn't even answer the door. Like you, like I just had it unlocked and I was on the floor of the bathroom, but it was really nice that you had been to my house before. Like you knew where my bathroom was and you know, that like, just, you knew my dog and you'd been in my space before. That also, I think, helped me feel just more comfortable. And I know sometimes you probably meet at a coffee shop or, you know, that type of thing, but I didn't realize how valuable that would be until we were at the night of the birth.
Yeah. If possible, I meet with people in their homes. There's been only a few clients that if they live in Fredericksburg or something like that, where we'll just meet at a coffee place or something when they're in town for their prenatals, because that's outside of my, like, I'm not going to buzz to Fredericksburg at 6 p.m. But most people, I do think it's important to go to people's homes. And that's where it's different than the rest of your maternity care, where you're going onto someone else's turf and you're on their time and they, you know, leave at a certain time. I want you to feel like this is my place. This is my turf. And I am joining you in your space. And we're making that a place where we've been, we've talked before. It helps me to, if I go there prenatally, when it's not dark, when it's 2 a.m., it's easier for me to get to people's homes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some people have me meet them at the hospital or birthing center, or if they're having an induction, I end up just meeting them there anyway. But for people who want to especially labor at home, having been there and feel like I'm welcome in their home as a guest in their home, you know, and your cute dog and you know, it's just nice. Yeah. It feels better. I really enjoy that being brought into a part of your life.
Mm-hmm. And I think we should probably say, just because it's not normal practice, the fact that you drove me to the hospital is pretty unusual. And I remember asking you that before you knew where I lived, like in our first or second conversation, and it was just on Zoom. And you were like, I could tell there was some hesitancy. And then I'm thinking like liability, like what if I have my baby in her car? And like, what if like she gets in a wreck or what, you know, those types of things. And then when you found out I lived like two blocks from the hospital, you're like, okay, you know, but especially I think for a single mother by choice, if your plan is to do something similar to what I did, which was that Sarah was going to come to my house whenever I kind of felt like I was ready for that. And then we were going to make our way to the hospital from there. I didn't know if it was going to be day or night. I didn't know if my family is going to be in town. Like I didn't, but I knew she was a ride. And so I think if you're looking to hire a doula don't just assume that they're going to drive you. Like, definitely have that conversation.
Yeah.
Don't be surprised if they're like, no, you're going to need a friend.
I would say most doulas in Austin, the answer is typically no. Just, you know, we caution each other like, hey man, if something happened and you might be liable for this or that.
Definitely.
So usually doulas come meet you at your home and then follow you to the hospital. So if you have, you know, someone else that could drive you, if you're not close or if they're not comfortable, and a lot of doulas wouldn't be comfortable, we could see the hospital from your house. And in the moment, I probably would have just done anything.
Because we were about to have a driveway birth.
Right. I was like, just get in.
Oh my God. I'm so glad I had no idea how close I was to giving birth. Like I had no idea. I mean, I really thought, like I said in the last episode, my biggest fear was, oh my God, I'm going to be doing this for the next 24 hours.
Oh gosh.
And I was like, I can't, I thought it was an early labor. And I was like, people are like watching Netflix and making muffins. Like, how do they do that? I can't even stand up.
I know. And at the time, because I was also trying to stay calm for you so that you didn't feel panicked.
Uh-huh.
You couldn't sense what I was like, oh my gosh, it's close. All these are contractions. These aren't gas pains. And so like, I vividly remember like kind of walking slowly out of your bathroom and then like pulling off all my clothes and like putting on birthy clothes, like instead of my pajamas that I had on. I was like, okay, I got to get into like other clothes besides pajamas. And then I went into your bathroom and you started growling. And so I was like, I'm going to put my hair up just in case the baby comes out and I have to catch it.
And oh my God.
So I was like, really calmly, like, okay, I think I might be able to get her, but I think it might be too late and I'm going to just stay calm either way. And so.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. One of the memories that I have is probably, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes after my son was born, maybe even sooner than that, but he was on my chest. The adrenaline was kind of leaving my body. And I looked over at you and I knew you were there the whole time and you were helping, you were giving me water. You put my hair up, like you were totally there. But I looked at you and I was like, I haven't even made eye contact with you. I felt so rude because you'd come to my house, you'd carried my bags, you'd done like all these things for me. It had been hours and not that many hours because it was all very fast, but it had been a couple hours.
Just a couple.
And I was like, this is literally the first time I've looked in your eyes and just been like, oh, hi. Glad you're here.
I think you said that. I think you said,
I did.
Hey. Oh, hi.
Yeah.
Because, you know, whether it's a fast labor like that or longer, at a certain point, people go into what we call labor land. Mm-hmm. And I want that. I try to set up an environment where my clients don't have to use their thinking brain too much and they can close their eyes and feel safe and they can zone out and feel safe or they can yell and feel safe and not have to think like, oh, who's around me? Who's watching me? Who's listening to me? That all can hinder, you know, the progress of birth. And that's a lot of times how you can tell how far someone is into their labor is, are they aware of everything that's going on? Right. Are they in like, they're in a zone? And you were super in a zone when I got to you.
Well, and a lot of people asked me about what my support looked like. And that honestly is one of the reasons I chose not to have a friend or a family member or someone attend my birth with me, because there was a part of me that was like, what if I say something really ugly, or what if I'm like rude to them, or what if all of those things? And so I think it's a testament to your personality and how safe and comfortable I felt with you that I wasn't worried about hurting your feelings or being nice to you, or like, I didn't offer you a glass of water when you got to my house and I was on the floor, right. You know, I did not treat you like a guest in my home. I just wasn't sure. Now that I've been through it, I'm like, oh yeah, I wouldn't have cared with a family or friend either. Like, it is weird how all inhibitions just, I mean, like walking into the delivery room, I'm like, I don't really know how I got my pants off, but I'm pretty sure I just like pulled them off and threw them on the floor and hopped up on the bed. Like, I don't really remember that part, but you do like drop all of your kind of social graces.
Yeah.
But that was one of the reasons why I made the decision to not have someone attend who I felt like there was, I mean, you and I have a relationship, but our relationship is based on birth.
This.
And on my birth.
Yeah.
And I was your client. And so it was different than being rude to my mom or being rude to my sister. Not that I was rude to you, but I just didn't know what I was going to do. Like, I just didn't know how it was going to be.
Yeah. Well, and the difference. So as far as like who you have in your birth space. So once you get to that point where you were, where you don't care and all that stuff goes out the window. There are parts of labor where people do still care, and having certain people in your space can actually slow down a birth. Mm-hmm. And it can mean the difference between, does this baby come sooner and unmedicated, or does this person, the only way for them to relax right now is to have an epidural because they have this nervous mom who's in the corner pacing mm-hmm. and saying, why don't you just do this? Why don't you just do this?
Mm-hmm. So, do you ever see that with partners? Do you ever see like yes. the partner is the one that's kind of.
Yes. And so I try, you know, when it's partners, when I'm meeting them prenatally, I do tell them, like, I'm your doula too. And if you don't know how to act, copy what I'm doing. You know, the good thing about a doula is I am not so emotionally invested that it's going to pain me to see you hurting. You know, you're roaring and I'm like, good, this is great. You know, versus like, if it's your mother or like right. your partner that loves you, like it pains them to see you hurting. And so all they want to do is make the hurt go away.
Yeah.
And if they can't, then they're just a ball of nervous energy. Or sometimes crack jokes or, you know, don't really right. know what to do. Well,
and you've also seen it a lot of times before. So you have this oh, yeah. whole range of experiences of what right. is quote unquote normal during birth.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you listened to me tell my birth story. And even as I was saying, like, it wasn't as painful. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. But I do remember that I was like screaming bloody murder at the time, but it's still like, there was still this sort yeah. of separation between my body and my mind. And I think uh-huh. what I mean when I say it wasn't as painful or wasn't as bad is that I always felt safe and I always felt in control. Like one of the affirmations that I practiced, I did a hypnobirthing course. And one of the affirmations was that like my body can't, or my
the contractions cannot be stronger than you because
right,
they are
because
you.
They are yeah. you. Yeah. And yeah. so yeah. I definitely felt that like it, I was able to, even in the midst of the pain, sort of have this like out of body. Oh, wow. That's what labor pains feel like. And yeah. like, isn't that interesting? And also mm-hmm. super painful, but it never felt like it was getting away from me or like it was going to overtake me.
Yeah.
Which no, is because like what you experienced of like watching me versus what I experienced, I thought about you listening to that podcast and I was like, I wonder if she was like, what the hell is she talking about? She was in so much pain.
I loved it. Well, but really it wasn't super long. So that's also a difference when someone has a 24-hour labor where they're feeling those sensations for longer, it can start to be harder to keep up with that. Uh-huh. You definitely have to have tools and different comfort techniques that you're using. But yeah, I mean, that is kind of a beautiful, after my first unmedicated birth, I was like, oh, I'm not doing that again. I have two more kids. And because you do kind of forget some of it. And really what stays with you more is, did I feel safe? Did I feel listened to? And how was I treated? A lot of times it's not even the birth outcome, but if people feel safe. And if they feel like their voices are like, you didn't want to get off your hands and knees. And you know what? No one at your birth made you, you know, mm-hmm. they listened to you and mm-hmm. they accommodated you. That doesn't always happen. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, once the body starts to forget some of those sensations, what you're left with was like, did I feel empowered? Did I feel mm-hmm. safe? Did I feel like, okay, one more. And I remember hearing someone say, okay, you're doing this. You can do that. Like that's the stuff that stays right. with you is more of the stuff in your brain.
Right. I remember the doctor several different times offering, she said, you know, I can tell you how to use your contractions more effectively. Would you like me to tell you? And I remember at first yep. I was like, no, I don't want you to tell me anything. And then she said it again. Mm-hmm. And that time I was like, I want you to tell me, but I don't know if I can do it. Like, I don't know if I can follow directions right now. That sounds really hard, you mm-hmm. know? And each time she yeah. offered, I had a different response to it. First, it was like, no, leave me alone. Then it was like, I feel so, I'm tired. Like, I don't know if I can. And then she offered it again. And each time it was very gentle, but very direct. And that time I was like, yeah, just tell me and we'll see what mm-hmm. happens. And she was totally right. Like, and I think something that she said was, you know, your baby's going to come, but you're the only one who can get him here faster. And then she said again, would you like me to tell you how to push yeah. in a way that's going to be more efficient? And that was the light bulb where I was like, yes, tell me. And I'm going to really try to do it. I don't know if I can, but you know, I'll try. And yeah. she's totally right. Yeah. So yeah, I well, think you're right. That was part of how I felt safe was she wasn't yelling directions at me. She was letting me take my time to get to a point where I was even willing to accept guidance. Yep. And then the way that she gave it was really useful. Yeah.
I noticed that. And I noticed that you had nurses and a doctor in your birth experience that asked consent for things, that followed your lead, and that offered help, but didn't insist, this is the way I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. And that's not always what I see at births. So when those things happen, that's why there are certain practices that I recommend more than others. Mm-hmm. Just no matter if your birth ends up being fast and unmedicated like yours, or if it ends up being long with an epidural, like it's still like the quality of the care when you know that they're seeing you still as a human being and not just as a procedure. I feel like that's just so important, that you're just, because you're having a baby doesn't mean you don't still, you ask consent for things and you're not still a whole person. So right. I appreciated that people still listen to you and let you kind of lead the thing. You were the one doing the work.
Yeah. One thing that I thought was kind of funny, I don't know, I don't think I actually remember this. I think you told me about this later, that there was a nursing student in the room who was like, is she allowed to do that with some of the like natural birthing things, like at maybe the birthing bar or like the positions that I was in?
Yeah, you were on your hands and knees facing backwards. And this is really great for this nursing student to see it. And because you had a doctor that would have caught the baby in that position, I think you did start pushing in that position a little bit, but the nursing student goes, is she allowed to push in that position? And the doctor's like, yeah, I've done it before.
She's doing it.
She can, a baby still can come out that way. But if you only ever see, you know, on the back end, the stirrups, then yeah, as a nursing student, and she was young, she probably hasn't had any kids. And so she, to think that you can't have a baby this way, that's really important for them to see variety and to see doctors that support that. That's not always the case.
Not everybody does.
So yeah, that was cool. And I love that they got, I don't know if you remember this, but they were trying to get your IV in so many times because you were facing the back of the bed. So they were doing it. They were coming in the between the wall and the bed to get your IV in. And they ended up asking another nurse who was there. She was like, oh, you're left-handed. I need you to do this. So they like got a left-handed nurse to be able to get your IV in because they were trying to let you stay in the position that you wanted to be in. So that
was cool. That's amazing. I remember that it was really hard for them to get the IV in, but I don't remember between the wall and the bed. That makes me feel actually kind of better about I was bruised all over and you know,
it still sucked. Yes.
One of the things that was funny is that
I know it wasn't pleasant. No one likes that part. Yeah.
No, I was so prepared to have to like advocate for myself in a way that I really didn't have to at all. Like I felt very safe and very respected the entire birth, but I kind of used up my self-advocacy that I had like was so certain I was going to need at the very end, like after my son was born, after he'd been kind of cleaned up, he's on my chest. And then a nurse comes over and that damn IV was still driving me nuts. And I was like, I no longer consent to having this in my arm. And I would like someone to take it out.
Yes.
Like I'll sign something that says I understand the risks, but I need someone to take this out right now.
Did they take it out? I can't even remember.
Well, she said we usually leave it in, and I thought she was going to say like for an hour or two, and I was already pissed about that. And she said for 24 hours, and I was like, oh no.
Not
for 24 hours. And so she was like, okay, well, we'll get it out. And she left the room for some reason. But when she came back, she was like, okay, I'm about to get it out. So they did take it out. In an hour or two after the birth.
They keep it in long enough, definitely for that Pitocin that they're running after the birth. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes they leave it, but especially depending on where they end up putting it, it can be very inconvenient for holding your baby or breastfeeding.
Yes. I know at one point I was begging people to cut my shirt off because I couldn't get it off because of the IV and I wanted to do skin to skin with my baby. So I'm like, someone just cut my shirt off. And then I think I was like, but not my bra because it's new or something like that.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. Well, we've been kind of all over the place, but this has been great.
Yeah.
I do want to ask you if you have any advice or thoughts that would be different for a single mother by choice versus someone who's birthing with a partner.
I was thinking about that. I would say the development of the relationship, it is helpful. I have to go with my client's lead. They don't want to get as chummy with me, then that's their thing. But I found it more helpful to feel like I had more conversations with you and felt closer to you, because in a different way than normally as a doula, I'll tell people, listen, I can't speak for you. I will help you to speak for yourself, or I will let your partner know, hey, it looks like they're picking up this monitor or this, whatever, AmniHook or something like that. So that if you didn't want that, that they can speak up for you, because as doulas, if we're speaking for people too much in the hospital, then there can be this idea that we have an agenda and we're just controlling people's births. And that's not the case. I knew it might be a little different, and it was, but I felt that because I knew what your wishes were, and I spent more time thinking, okay, this is stuff she really doesn't want. This is what, how she likes to be treated. Or, you know, I know this is important. This is kind of a, if it happens, it happens. If not, it's not a big deal. There were some times where I can't even remember now, but they were asking me questions. And normally they would be asking the partner, you know, someone else, their partner or something like that. And so I felt that without you having said, like, yes, you can say anything to them, you know, if they ask questions, I just started answering, because I didn't want, you were not in a position where you could speak. And I didn't want you to have to be there in transition and then get into your thinking brain, because already you were having to sign consents and things like that. But in a way, as far as differences, there might be more times where your doula might have to say, okay, they definitely want this or not. And so it's just having a doula that feels comfortable and confident in this birth setting that you're in to speak to the staff. So maybe when I was a newer doula, I felt a little more intimidated, but there's definitely a way of advocating for someone without sounding bossy or confrontational, like, oh, hey, here's the birth plan that she had. Here's some wishes. You know, this is something that was important to her. And I didn't want you, there were certain questions that they're asking. I didn't want you to have to stop and answer. Like, they kept saying, is there anybody else we're waiting for? Is there anybody else we're waiting for?
And I do remember that.
Nope. And
I was clearly not waiting for anything. That baby was not waiting either.
Baby's not waiting, but they didn't know if like someone was parking the car or something like that. But it is a little bit different. Now, if you have a best friend or a sister or a mom or someone there, it could be different depending on their personality. They might have the personality that they're like feeling protective, like, okay, I'm going to do the advocating. And if they feel like that, that's fine. They also could benefit from meeting with a doula beforehand. Absolutely. If they're going to be there, to say like, hey, you know, we're going to phrase things this way. This is what I find to be more helpful than saying it in this antagonistic way. And if they're nervous, if, you know, say you've got a mom and she is terrified of childbirth, but you want her there, definitely talking with the doula, and that doula may still have to be in that role of advocating a little bit more. So I would say that that was different. Oh, really knowing that person, if it's not going to be an induction, knowing the layout of their house, knowing, you know, okay, these are the, like the bag situation. Most of the time there's someone else there that's getting the car, that's getting the bags in the car. I felt like the bumbling dad. When I went to go get your stuff in my bag, I didn't have my bag with the key to the car. So I couldn't actually open my car. So then I was running back into my car whilst you were having contractions, grabbing my bag so that if I was close enough, the car would unlock, because you're just standing outside my car trying to not have a baby, but you couldn't get in my car anyway. So I felt a little like, oh my gosh, this is what those partners go through, the stress of like, I got to get them there, you know? And and that's how I was feeling, like, got to get her there. And then you didn't want to, weren't in a position to put a seatbelt on. So then I'm mom arming you, you know,
holding. And do you remember that I was trying to give you directions to the hospital? I was like telling you which way to turn.
Yes. You're like left, right.
Oh my gosh.
I was so glad you were close. Yeah. So I guess that would be the difference. And it would be different if someone had someone there during the birth versus not. What, for you, do you feel like it would have been hugely different? I mean, your birth was so fast, but having someone else there, do you think it would have been different than just having you and me?
I'm so glad I did it the way that I did it. My sister is definitely the person who I would have had there if I had had someone. And she is, like I said, you know, in the last episode, she did come shortly after, but she's sort of squeamish. Like, she just didn't really want to see birth. She's not someone who ever wants to give birth. She didn't really want to see birth. I was fine with her not being there, but I'm pretty independent. I mean, I like to do most things alone. And I think that that may be part of what led me to become a single mother by choice, is that it doesn't bother me. I travel alone. I go to restaurants alone. It just does not bother me. I like to say, like, I'm happy with my own company. Like, I just, I don't always feel like, I'm very introverted, and I just don't always feel like I need a buddy, you know? So mm-hmm. I think having you there was essential, but I didn't miss or even think about having someone else. And I think I'm kind of glad for me, for my personality, that there wasn't someone else there, but I could totally see why someone would want that. But one of the things that I think is interesting is that I thought having a doula was something that I for sure wanted to do for my first birth. And I looked at it as sort of this investment, like you would be there for the first time and I would learn all of these things from you and almost like study or like take notes on like what I needed to know as a birthing person. And then next time I wouldn't mm-hmm. need a doula. And now I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, there's no way I'm giving birth without a doula. Like, no way. And it better be yeah. you. So we'll get it on the calendar. As soon as I get a positive yeah. pregnancy test, I'm calling
Yay.
You.
I would love that.
Yeah, no, it's something that is more valuable than what I even anticipated. And I never questioned whether or not I was going to have a doula. Like I knew, as soon as yeah. I knew what a doula was, I knew that I wanted that. I think also I talk a lot and post a lot on Instagram and whatnot about just like women and community and female friends. And there's something just really kind of beautiful and just connecting through all of the generations about having another woman present for my birth. And I think everyone yeah. in the room, it was all women. My doctor was a woman.
Yes.
And, you know,
I love it.
Yes. But I think something about you being a woman who values birth and values that respect and autonomy during birth, and you've attended all of these births, just like bearing witness and like choosing to be a part of my birth. So there's the client and professional relationship, but also, I mean, I feel very close to you in a way that like I didn't expect. I love that you've texted me since my birth and you're like, hey, I'm in the area. You want me to stop by your house? Like there's no way that you walk away from that experience not feeling connected. You know, it was such a beautiful thing. So yeah. I think for sure, I can't imagine not having that if I do it again.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard to doula yourself. You know, I've had babies since I've been a doula and I still needed the kind of support that I give to other people. You can't talk yourself through some of that stuff. Right. It's sometimes it's unique because you're in it and you need someone who's not in it to kind of mm-hmm. hold your hand, like kind of not do it for you, but just be there with you in it.
Right. Well, it's weird to use the yeah. word pampering because it's not a very like luxurious experience, but and you even said after my birth, you were like, that was so fast. I didn't get to do all of the, like, I didn't do any of the massage or any of the
candles and all right, the stuff that I had packed. Right.
Yes. Aromatherapy. But I mean, I think I was in elementary school the last time someone put my hair in a ponytail. Like you put my hair in a ponytail for me. Like you pulled my hair out of my face and I think you redid it a couple times and it was like
yeah.
out and you were rubbing my back. And like, I remember all of that and it was so
yeah.
sweet. And I think it's so right that most of the people in the room are there for the baby and they're monitoring the baby and they're there to catch the baby and they're going to suction the baby. And you know, it's all about the baby and you were the one that was there just for me. And it was just so
yeah.
sweet to feel that sisterly energy of like, I felt so safe having you there. So thank yeah. you for being
yeah,
there.
Of course. I mean, I think that's always been something that's come really naturally to me. And it's just very instinctual for me to nurture people. And mm-hmm. so getting to pull people's hair back or wipe their face if they're sweaty and hot or put their chapstick on for them. Mm-hmm. It's just an extension. I mean, I love that that's my job. And
so yeah, and you're amazing at it.
Thank you. I mean, and that's how many generations that was how the birth process went is, you know, the women in the culture would kind of surround each other. And it used to be something that was like passed down through families and it might be your grandmother delivering your baby. I love being a part of that history and that culture yes. of supporting people in birth.
Well, thank you so much for being yeah. there for me. And thank you for talking today. Is there anything else before we go that you want to make sure to say or share?
I can't think of anything. Yeah, if people have more questions, they are welcome to reach out and ask me.
But, we'll make sure to share all yeah. of your contact information. You guys should definitely follow Sarah on Instagram because even if you're not in the Austin area and you're not planning to work with her directly, I have learned things about another thing I didn't get to do, but I loved your Instagram post about the birthing cave in the bathroom of the hospital. Like I didn't even see the bathroom. I don't even know if there was a yes. bathroom in there.
Yes. But, a week ago I used the magical laboring cave as I call it yes, on another, yes. another client used it.
I've learned from your Instagram page about car seat safety. There are just so many things mm-hmm. that you've got on there that are valuable. So even if you're not in the Austin area, definitely check Sarah out and scroll through the history on her Instagram page. And I just thank you so much for
thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn more about me, this podcast, and the Single Greatest Choice coaching at my website, www.singlegreatestchoice.com, or find me on Instagram at single_greatest_choice. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all of my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.